EMSradio.com.
EMS information for the next generation.
The EMS Leadership Podcast is a production of EMSradio.com. You can interact with us via email, emsleadership@gmail.com, or call us 303-720-6001.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of the EMS Leadership Podcast. And now here's your host, Chris Ceballero.
Well, thank you again for joining us on EMS Leadership. I'm Chris Ceballero, and you know, as we get ready for Christmas, hopefully you got all that shopping that's put away. And I said to somebody today, you know, it's the 11th of December. I said to someone today, 2 weeks before Christmas, and it kind of startled me a little bit because I really don't have tons of my shopping done, and I've got to mail a lot of my stuff out, so I better get on that ball. But happy holidays to everybody out there. Merry Christmas. And, you know, today, as we get to the end of our year, you know, we're kind of running out of those topics to talk about. So we're going to kind of just catch up with our guests, see what's going on. We've got our cast of characters that are with us, and let's go ahead and bring them in here first. We're going to go with Patrick Pianezza. Patrick, how are you?
I'm doing great, Chris.
Christmas shopping, how's that going for you?
It's going pretty good. My family is going to get lucky to see me. I figure the plane tickets right. are expensive enough.
Make sure the bow is in the appropriate place. That's all I'm going to say as you walk through the door. And let's go out to the East Coast. I'm sure where he's covered with snow is Rob Lawrence. Rob, how are you?
Actually, the snow missed us, but as an Englishman, of course, I'm very qualified to moan about the weather. We had the ice storm, the snow missed us, and apparently it's going to be frigid tomorrow.
Well, that's crazy. Well, it's a good thing that you missed that snow because it was getting pretty bad up there in that northeast. Good thing you didn't have to dig out from that.
No, indeed. And I used to live up in Canada where getting out of the window to dig the door out was almost an occupational hazard in the winter.
Yeah, that would be crazy. And once again joining us is our good friend Don Lundy. Don, how are you?
I'm doing okay, Chris. And again, thanks so much for having me on the show. It's such an honor.
Well, like I said before, I think that you guys were going to have to consider y'all co-hosts rather than guests because we seem to do this on a weekly basis. But a couple things to talk about, I think, before we go. But Don, recently, you know, you had a little bit of a coronary event, and I was with you there in Fort Worth, and very surprised to hear that you went home and decided to get sick. You know, maybe just a little bit about the relationship between being a paramedic and being a patient in that predicament. Just maybe educate our audience.
I did. I had a smidgen of a heart attack. That's the medical term my cardiologist used. And I was very blessed. We have a really good system of folks, not only the EMS folks, but the hospital staff and the team approach to the whole thing. I did not become a paramedic patient because, frankly, I was scared to death. And it was obvious that there were lots of professionals around me that knew what to do because we drilled it thousands and thousands of times. And the audience has... Many of you out there have reviewed STEMI reports, and you snap your fingers and say, man, that's the bomb. That's just awesome how that works. There is nothing like, really, there is nothing like lying on the stretcher and realizing you're the STEMI patient and watching the team work. I was in the cath lab on the table within about 23 minutes of when I came through the door. And well shy of 40 minutes, I was having a cath done. I had a STEMI put in. I had a stent put in, a coated stent, which I learned about that. I didn't know anything about that when we started. And it cleared up the blockage. And 48 hours after the stent was put in, I went home. And I got to spend Thanksgiving with my wife and my nephew. And God is great. The prayers that were out there, I felt definitely, and I would tell anybody who thinks that being a paramedic is pretty easy, you just need to do what you need to do. I would tell you that once, and this goes from the people that I talk to, once your boss is on the stretcher, it takes on a whole new level of excitement. And I can tell the people who do this every day better than the medical stuff I saw, better than the 12 lead and the IV and the communication and the transmission and the all that, was the calm look on everybody's face while they did this. I'm fairly famous, I guess, for reading people's faces to see what really goes on, because we really give ourselves away. And, of course, they knew that, but I think they do that professionally anyhow. And their faces were confident and smiling, and just made me feel very comfortable. So I'd say to anybody who has a really good IV skill, that's not going to be as important as how you present to the patient and look at them. That while in your head you might be screaming, "Oh my God, he's dying," your face and your manners have to tell them that everything's under control. It will make all the difference in the world to that person lying on the stretcher who thinks their life's slipping away, that you really put something in your head that nothing's going to happen to you while you're with this crew, while you're with the hospital staff, while you're on the cath table.
Yeah, it's incredible. And I'm sure that all those smiles and calm faces had nothing to do with you being the guy who signed their checks. So, we lose this guy, who's going to pay us, kind of thing, right?
You know, there was a comment that if I happen to die on the stretcher, paramedics evaluation, my understanding is that really tanks it. And we laughed about that. You know, it was a very, very funny joke, and it kept me at ease. But I'm not sure how much when he got through, he didn't say, "Oh, yeah, geez." So I am alive tonight, and I am healthy. I'm going back to work tomorrow, pain-free, and you know, God is great.
Well, we're glad you are. And, of course, when we heard, you know, all your friends, and, of course, we were very concerned, and we're glad that you're here with us, and it's going to be happy holidays, so that's great. Rob, let's go ahead and jump back to you because, you know, as, you know, before we get into our show, one of the things that we look at, me as a mid-size EMS system, and there's some smaller-size EMS systems, we kind of look to our high-performance EMS systems and kind of see the best practices and kind of see what's going on. You guys went through a good week. You've got some things going on there in Richmond. Go ahead and share with the audience.
Yeah, we've actually been the first of what's going to be many systems taking part in a study by NIOSH. Now, of course, NIOSH is the National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health, and they're coming around to many sites around the country to physically measure in what's called an anthropometry study. And what they're doing is taking physical measurements of EMS providers and study every type of measurement, you know, arm length, body mass index, etc. The point of doing that is to inform pretty much the future culture of safety, to inform the design of everything from ambulances to ambulance chairs, seats, seat belts. And in fact, part of the study, the providers all had to put a 5-point harness on and then go through a full body scanner to see how the harness fits the body, how the body, you know, reacts to the harness being on, etc. Also, an interesting thing were the face masks that we wear, being scanned with those on as well. And the idea being is we can make a better fit if we measure and know the average size of our providers. So it's been a fascinating week just to, A, get everybody through that. Also, to look at the technology that NIOSH are using to really space-age stuff. As I say, full-body scanner, they can produce a 3D image of you. I had a 3D image of me produced, and I asked them to delete it immediately. But the point being is I think they're coming around. Albany and Dallas are next. They're coming to a system near you. Sign up for it because, of course, it's an investment in our future in terms of kit and equipment that we produce. And we're delighted that we took part in it. And, you know, we hope it will pay dividends in the future.
Awesome. And if you can get that 3D likeness, maybe I can get me one of those cardboard stand-ups of you and keep it in my office.
Well, the funny thing is, talking to the NIOSH guys, they actually, as I said, they do a 3D image scan of you, and they have a 3D printer back in, and they're based in Morgantown, West Virginia, and they go the dogs off, and they can print people. It's fascinating.
Very interesting. So let's not forget our good friend Patrick Pianetta. Let's bring him in. And Patrick, if I can kind of brag on you a little bit, you know, we've talked about you, you know, being a paramedic, critical care certified, and, you know, learning the hospital side of the business, being the manager of service excellence in a past position. And we've talked a lot on this show about, you know, accountable care organizations and HCAHPS scores and value-based purchasing. And what that means to us in EMS is that's the hospital side of what's going on. When we think about mobile integrated healthcare, advanced practice paramedics, community paramedics, whatever you guys are calling them, you know, it's the relationships that we have with the hospital that is going to help us get some funding that'll keep us sustainable as we move into the future. And knowing the challenges that the hospitals are having, I think is a real big benefit for you as you embark on your new venture of being an EMS consultant. So let's chat about that a little bit.
Sure, I'd be delighted to. It's a small firm I've started up. we're always looking for new clients and people to partner with. But essentially, it's exactly what you're talking about. It's full spectrum operations consulting from, and we focus more on the employee engagement, patient satisfaction piece, and integration with hospital services. And the whole point of that is exactly what you're saying. Community paramedicine is coming around. In fact, I just published an article with HC Pro, which is the Joint Commission newsletter, in their med staff briefing about the importance of strong ER and EMS relationships, especially when it as it pertains to volume in the future as far as driving revenue. And I've got a second piece of that. They have asked me to write another piece about community paramedicine, specifically with the focus of how are we doing that. And what does that mean in the future with accountable care, like you were saying, value-based purchasing, et cetera. And more importantly, we're looking at that 30-day readmission window as it pertains to hospitals. And the answer is it's quite gray. I don't know what that's going to be, but I think it's an innovative way to start looking at how hospitals and EMS systems can start participating together for really a community benefit. I mean, there's obviously financial incentives for the hospital side, and I think the right way to do it is via a cost savings percentage that goes to the EMS system as well. But there's multiple different models out there. The article is right now somewhere between my head and the computer. It's about a little bit written. Looking forward to really spreading that idea and gaining traction on the hospital side. I think most of the EMS guys are getting it. They understand that it's it really is a symbiosis or symbiotic relationship there. Sorry, I can't talk. And I think that the relationships are only going to get strengthened. And I think part of that is due to the regulatory changes that are coming down the pike. But more importantly, it's the right thing to do in your community. And I'm just a guy trying to help out there where I can. And like I said, it's something we started. We'll see if it takes off or not. And if anybody's interested, you can always email me at ppnetsa@gmail.com.
Let me add something onto that, Chris, actually. And going back to Expo, EMS World Expo, we were doing a session and Matt Zavadsky was in there, and he made a great point by saying that we in the EMS world, excuse the pun, need to learn to speak hospital right now. And, you know, Patrick used HCAPs, value-based purchasing, Prescani scores. We need to understand what they mean too. And perhaps, Patrick, part of the service you do us next is to reveal, unveil and demystify some of that stuff so that everybody understands exactly the lingo that we need to get into.
And that's easily done. Well, I say that. We definitely could do that anytime.
And I think one of the other advantages, Patrick, as well, as being in a hospital-based system and having had to learn all these terms, one of the great things that I think that you can offer your clients as well is how to get in front of those hospital administrators and how to bridge that, you know, the gap for the resources as well. I mean, you know, as well as I do and anyone else who works in the hospital systems, the things that are keeping the hospital administrators up at night. And I think that I've got a very valuable education in my EMS career, my EMS leadership career, being part of a big hospital-based system that has really given me the opportunity, as I've set off on our community paramedic, you know, look of the future, that I'm able to communicate on a different level. And that's been very invaluable. So towards the end of the show, Patrick, when we get into your closing, go ahead and give your email address again, and maybe if you want them to reach you by phone. But I think it's really great, and whatever we can do to help, we're more than happy to be part of that as well if you need us. So, well, guys, as we look at our show, you know, we've kind of been talking and kind of have things just moving along a little bit, catching up with each other. But I want to kind of turn this into a question and answer night. You know, as we kind of get towards the end of the year, we've covered a lot of topics this year. Maybe the next show we do will be the last show of the year. We'll kind of have a year in review, or, you know, what's 2014 going to look like or something to that effect. But as I start to think about my own department and as I start to think about where we are, I get a lot of questions all the time from folks about, you know, how can they be better leaders and so on. So I want to kind of take some of those questions and I want to ask them to you. And Patrick, since we kind of left off with you, maybe we'll start with you. And one of the things that I've always tried to teach and I've always had some challenges with different people is, you know, how to prioritize our time management. So the question I want to ask you is, with all the things that we have to do in our day, how do we best ensure that we get all our duties accomplished in a timely manner?
Well, I think the first step is making sure you're not trying to do it on an unrealistic schedule. All of you are dealing with budgetary issues, HR issues, maintenance issues, equipment issues. Don't set yourself up to fail. And what I mean by that is don't go to your board of governors or county council or whoever your regulatory body is and say, we're going to have all of this fixed by, you know, the end of the year as it is today, because you're setting yourself for an unrealistic expectation. With that being said, once you've figured out what that timeline is, start looking at what affects your people first. They need to start seeing small wins being gained there. And the other thing that's just as crucial to look at is staying true to who you say you are. So again, pulling out that mission statement and that vision statement and saying, you know, if we say we're going to deliver world-class healthcare, what on this list is the first thing we've got to knock out to ensure that we're doing what we say we're going to be doing? And going from there, obviously, you're going to have projects that are going to be multiple years out. You're going to have some that are going to be a quick fix. But really looking at mission critical things, I would say first, and going from there. And what does it take to fulfill your mission to your community? And more importantly, what's it going to take to ensure that the mission to your people is being met? And that's really the gut check for me is when I'm looking at things that have to get done, I look at what's the most important, not necessarily what's the easiest or what's the hardest. I don't put those on the scale as heavily as far as what's the most important to say, to do who we say we are.
That's kind of an interesting way to look at it, and I like that. And Don, if I can go to you and kind of flip the question a little bit, kind of staying on the same lines. If you were going to be the mentor of someone that you're going to teach time management skills to, how do you guide him in that?
Well, I think, you know, that's a hard question. So let me start with the basis when we talk about time management. And I think a lot of people think of gadgets and things that you can use, and I would tell anybody that has a gadget that they think that works, whether it's an iPad or a scheduling device or whatever it is, you know, to utilize that as much as they can. But I think the biggest place where we commonly lose time, even in the best of time management, is that we don't prioritize what's out there. And truly, in the management world, about 95% of what we do is not what we would call critical time issues. We think they are because somebody yelled loud or because the memo says it's very important that we get this done, when in fact it might be important in that one person's world. Now, if that one person's a county or a city councilman, yeah, you know, there's some issues you have to deal with. But more often than not, they're looking to you to prioritize what you need to do. And most of what we do during the day is not that time sensitive. So I always ask people who are, you know, who say, gosh, you know, how do you get things done the way you do? And I always laugh and say, you know, there's a lot of things I don't get done in the time that I want them to get done. So I think the three things I'd always say is, one, if you have a tool that really helps you, and you know, first of all, tell me why it helps you, because sometimes people have a tool and when you get through walking through it, it's more of a menace than anything else, but it's really cool. Well, you know, find a tool that you can use and use it. Second, I think prioritizing what is really time sensitive, and that's a hard thing to do, because all of our things are time sensitive. We want to get the stuff done that we have on the list today, the things that we were thinking about before we got to work, and we get to work and we got the list. You know, we need to look and make sure those two or three things, and generally that's the number during the day, that are actually time sensitive. We need to crank those out and get them done. And I think the third thing for time management is to be flexible, to absolutely be flexible in knowing that the schedule that you have, the time management that you're going to put together, is going to be thwarted by many, many fine things, a few of which are going to be time sensitive. A crisis within an employee's family or health, crisis within an operational aspect of the department, something out of the blue that's political that you didn't think it would be. And the idea that you try to stick with your original schedule, we don't do that as paramedics when we treat patients. And this, you know, I've always told people, when you come away from being a paramedic to a manager, it's a different world. Well, this is where it's kind of similar. You can have a patient who's not sick who suddenly goes critical, and you easily shift into high gear. On a time management issue, you might have a perfect schedule, and a political issue gets in the middle of it. Well, you need to slough that off to the next day, and it, you know, or until that one time issue is done. Flexibility is really the key to getting it done, I think.
I have to agree with you. And, you know, we always have to be kind of dynamic and flexible in our day. And that leads me great into the question to you, Rob, is the Richmond Ambulance Authority, high-performance EMS system, you guys live and die by the clock. So talk to me about time management of how you get things done in your day.
Well, firstly, the absolute key time is 580 seconds, which is just the time we are required to respond in an emergency. So therefore, our tempo is very, very high, and therefore you have to be very alert and have a great deal of situational awareness in everything that you do. Now, coming back to time management, if you ask any of my team, I am never seen anywhere on my campus without a notebook in my hand. There are iPads and computers. They jokingly call my notebook my N-pad. Because I write things down, I have lists, I have a priority, I reprioritize. So that's how I personally manage myself. How we manage the team is, and I think I said it last time, we meet for 15 minutes only every day, where we focus very sharply on the organization. We reorder the priorities, and Don's right that, you know, priorities do change, but we reorder those priorities, we set the direction, and we get out and do it. If there's something we have to do very quickly, we actually have what we call quite simply the fix of the day. And it's that thing that it takes may take everybody to help you achieve, but by no less, we achieve it. Also, personally, I like to finish one thing a day. And that sounds only finishes one thing a day. But when you start finishing one thing a day, when you look back, you've got 365 potential things that are completed in your year. Think about that in terms of your annual review. That's a hell of a lot of work that you've done. And so, you know, we meet, we organize, we prioritize, and we delegate. Because, of course, if you're working in a team, if you're a manager, there may be other people that you can delegate or assist you. And so, therefore, it's actually time management in an organization is very much a team game, and you have to play it well.
I think that's awesome, and that's a great best practice right there. And, you know, if you guys get anything out of this show, I think that that's one of the things that you take home and you start doing today, because that's a great best practice. Thanks a lot for that, Rob. So, Dom, maybe we start with you on this one. When you think about your problem-solving skills, you know, when we think about how we have to go through our day and we have to solve the problems that pop up, you know, we can't plan our day. There may be things we're going to try to do, but it seems that as soon as we get into the office, everybody knows we're there and all these things start to come at us. If we're going to teach somebody how to have good problem-solving skills, how do you guide them?
I'll tell you, that is an excellent point of something that I've recently gone through. I've had 2 weeks where I have been totally cut off. During this healing process, I have been able to get on email about an hour a day. Anybody that's out there that knows the email load of the director of a service and president of any EMT, I can't even begin to describe to you what that is. And I've had no cell phone. You can actually turn those off. It's pretty great. But as far as coming back to work and trying to catch up, you know, it's there. I think when somebody brings, and of course, when I come back, there's a series of problems. They've handled them very well, but there's some things that are out there need to get some cleanup on. And I think the two biggest things I can help people with is, number one, to remember that you are not on your paramedic's time anymore. And I've talked about that before. It's very hard for paramedics who go into a management mode to realize that they aren't doing a 20-minute problem anymore. Most of our patients are 20-minute issues, maybe 30 minutes. If you're in a rural area, maybe 40 minutes. But rarely are they a one-hour problem. In the super rural, they certainly are. But in a majority of EMS, they're not. Your timeline becomes much longer, and with the exception of those critical decisions, the building is on fire, what should we do? The patient walked in to pay a bill in the lobby and they're in cardiac arrest. Those are normal, everyday emergency decisions, problem solving that you can solve pretty good. When an employee comes in and starts telling you an issue that, you know, is a fairly serious one, the idea that you're going to solve this in 2 or 3 minutes. Now, once in a while, you'll be able to do it, and man, it's just awesome. But most of the time, it is a multi-leveled, multi-directional problem. And most of the time, employees don't want you to fix it in 3 minutes. First, they want you to listen. And I think Rob's point is great. always have paper with you, always have an iPad with you, always have a way to say, now tell to walk me through this thing. And that leads into the second point I'm gonna tell you is if your timeline stops being a paramedic's 20 minutes to the patient timeline and becomes a problem solving timeline, which might be that day or a week or a month or 6 months, once that happens, you also realize that in the position you're going to hold when you solve a problem or you answer the issue to a problem, you need to understand that it might affect every single person in your agency. And you need to stop for a minute and say, well, if I do this, if I move the checker from one point to another, what is that going to affect? And I'll give you a very simple thing that's happened, I bet, in everybody's system. Paramedic X suddenly, or it could have been building for a number of months. Nobody really likes Paramedic X anymore. He's become irritable. It might be, and who knows why, XYZ, could be family issues. And you're going to resolve those. But right now you have the agency getting ready to burn him in effigy if you don't move him this minute. So you say, effective tomorrow, Paramedic X goes from Station 1 to Station 6. Well, before you do that, somebody at 6 has got to get moved. And when they're moved, somebody at 4, where he's moved to, and that domino effect happens, and it affects people's lives. So I think the second part of that would be the problems that you resolve are going to affect more than the person that you're dealing with, no matter what. And I doubt if there are many problems that you'll solve that don't affect lots of people within the agency and lots that you didn't even think about. You need to know how that's going to affect them and try as much as you can, and sometimes you can, to minimize that damage, or at least to minimize it to a point that everybody can kind of swallow it. So I think those are the two things. When you're problem solving at your level, it's affecting more than the two or three people in the room, and you're not on a paramedic's time anymore.
So, Patrick, let's go ahead and go to you. Give us your thought on the problem solving, and then hit on, if you can, if I make a decision, as Don says, I'm making the decision for the whole organization. What if I'm wrong and, you know, I've got to make these decisions and I just don't know if I can do it right?
Well, I think when you're looking at solutions, the key thing is to always involve a team for the most part. I mean, unless you're dealing obviously with some confidential HR issues or obviously patient information issues, things of that nature, anything that doesn't cross that line, which I'm willing to bet is going to be a majority of the issues that you're going to be facing with as a day-to-day leader, bring a team in and don't be afraid to let them make mistakes, or more importantly, show your vulnerabilities and show that you can make a mistake. Don is famous for saying, you know, standing up in front of a group of people and say, you know what, I really screwed up and I'm sorry, but we're going to get this fixed and make it right. That's the essence of a true leader. You don't have to be perfect. Don't set yourself up for failure. And that's hard sometimes, especially in EMS, because let's face it, all of us have type A personalities. We like being the guy in charge, and God knows we don't like to be wrong, because we deal in patient people's lives, and we don't get paid to be wrong. The reality of the situation is, Don said it perfectly, you are no longer a paramedic. But the reality is it changes your mindset and changes your ability to attack problems, because I am no longer constrained by, like Don said, I have to fix this and I have to fix this in the next 10 minutes, because quite frankly, you can't. And if you try, you may get off doing it once or twice, but you're going to ultimately end up failing, because you're going to be that guy who's going to walk around and try to fix other people's problems and fix it in the most expedient manner. And that is not always going to be the right answer. So my advice is, when you hear the problem, figure out, one, is it worth your time? Is it something that's going to fix itself? Is it somebody who's just coming in to complain? Or is it a real issue that should be affecting the entire organization? And I don't say that lightly. Realize that there are people that you have working for you that are just as capable as you are as handling issues. And it's a huge process when you start talking about mentorship and succession planning. You need to be able to delegate the issues that come up to your organization. People want to talk to you because you're the head cheese. And just because you're the head guy doesn't mean you have to get involved in every single day-to-day minutia operations. You'll drive yourself crazy. That's why we have dispatchers. Let them dispatch the calls. That's not what you do. So my first thing is, I look at it kind of like a triage aspect. You know, here's problem X. Is problem X worth my time? Yes or no? And if the answer is no, is it worth someone who works for me to figure this out? Yes or no? And then if the answer to that's no, it's, you know what, I'm really sorry to hear that. Let me know if it comes up again, or is this something that is a one-time deal? If the answer to those questions is yes, who do I have in the bullpen that I can hand this off to and confidently think that they can either handle the situation or it causes them to grow? And my job is to help support them and mentor them and make sure that the answer is not only the right one, but the most efficient and effective one. But you want to make sure that other people are getting exposed to the operational issues that you're going to be facing, because someday you're going to retire and you need to make sure that you've got strong people behind you that can handle what's going on in the day-to-day operations.
Yeah, I have to agree. So, Rob, let me go and change questions for you. And when we think about our roles as leaders in an organization, it's important that we motivate. It's important that we inspire. It's important that we give our employees the energy to help us get towards our vision. But as leaders, we've got so much to do. And I want to ask you, maybe from a personal side, of how do you keep yourself motivated as a leader?
I think, first of all, you have to be a great enthusiast. You actually have to like what you do. You know, some people say my work is my hobby. Well, you need that work-life balance. But nevertheless, you have to be motivated to do what you do, because if you are enthusiastic, the effervescence and the glow that you personally give off is infectious. And therefore, you know, that is in fact a great, you know, leadership tip as well. If you're having fun and you enjoy what you're doing, then of course makes life a lot easier. And so, you know, my personal motivation is that I love what I do. I love being in the industry that, you know, for whom we make a difference in that one person's extreme moment of need. And that in itself is motivating. When you get to meet your survivors or the patients that come back, that is motivating and inspiring. And therefore, you know, from an organizational perspective, you must create those conditions to be successful and to lead. And, you know, you have to lead by example. Leading by example is much easier if you are personally motivated and, you know, really jazzed about what you do.
Very good. And Patrick, how about you? How do you keep yourself motivated in your day as you go about motivating your employees?
Well, I think it comes down to exactly what Rob said. You got to like what you do. If you don't like what you do, I'm going to throw a Donism out there. Go sell shoes. You're always on stage. I tell everybody all the time, especially leadership, you get paid to have a good day. It doesn't matter what's going on in your personal life. It doesn't matter what's going on at home. It doesn't matter that your beloved Gamecocks lost. You get paid to have a good day. So when you come into the office, you've got to be smiling. You've got to be cheerful. You got to be helpful, because that is what people are going to pay attention to. People will never listen. I'm trying to think of the quote. The quote is, what you do speaks so loud, I can't hear what you say. And so people are going to emulate what you do, not what you tell them to do. And you have to be that example. So staying motivated is not easy. I mean, you don't want to be manic. They make medications for that. You have to be the present that you have to present a confident, enthusiastic, and inviting persona every time you walk into the office, because that's what people are going to feed off of. And how you do that is, you know, there's probably 10,000 ways to do it. But I'm telling you, I can't tell you how to get motivated. If you don't like what you do, get out. But I absolutely will tell you, you have to be excited and you have to be energized to come to work.
Don, how about you? I'm sure over your tenure, your career, you've had to have the opportunity to keep yourself motivated in the times when things just are a little bit critical, or they're crucial, or they're worrisome, and the budget, and we got to cut, and are we going to get the ambulances we need? How do you keep yourself motivated?
That's a great question, and Patrick, you really stole my thunder. That is exactly what you need to do, as far as Patrick talked about, is being... You are the spokesman for the organization. You are the guy that's lifting everybody. But let me tell you, I think some people are looking for the tool that they use, and if they've met me, I know this seems strange, but some people think I'm crazy at times. You know, he's just a lunatic. I've never seen anybody move as fast as blah 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 blah. Well, let me tell you something. Everybody has something that motivates them, Patrick. Went into that corner just a little bit. And I'll tell you what I do. Now, this is a tool of mine, and if you hate music or you don't understand music, well, I don't know what to tell you. But I make CDs of, for lack of a better term, pump music. Music that inspires, music that lifts you up, music that that's music that we've all heard that when you hear it, you just want to smile for a minute and say, man, that's a great piece of music. And that doesn't matter whether it's classical or rock and roll or heavy metal, although I haven't heard much heavy metal that's positive. I mean, the tunes, a lot of times people can get there. And I pump myself up with that music, and I decide from the day I started this business that the idea that I was going to be a leader, but that my life was personal and it was nobody's business, well, that ship has sailed. The minute I leave this house, and in some cases before I leave the house, if a phone call comes in, act one, scene one, and action. And the action that you give to motivate people is always a happy life. You're right. I get the news the budget's going to be cut. I get the news they're not going to do that new program. I get the news that somebody had a wreck in their truck, particularly closely. And that'll really bring you down. It is really your responsibility to carry what small amount of motivation you can, and I'll explain that in a second, to your persona. And when people say, well, you know, Don, how can you stay so upbeat when they just told us there's no raises? Well, there's always another day. There's always another week. There's a company somewhere right now this minute that's fired everybody or gone bankrupt, and we're not there. There's somebody having chest pain who's not going to make it out of surgery. There's somebody in a wreck that they're trying to cut them out before they die. And look at us. We get to go in an ambulance and go help people. I mean, who wouldn't want that kind of job? At the end of the day, you come home and say, oh, I help people. Yes, some of them were kind of nasty. But they don't feel good. So, you know, I kind of give them a wide berth. But I think Patrick's right. If you don't like taking care of people, if you joined for the burning cars and the exploding trains, you need to go sell shoes, because that's not what this is about. But as a leader, you need to step up. Act one, scene one, and action. And it's hard in some cases, very, very hard. We've had several organizations that have, several personnel in our organizations who've died the last couple of years, some real beloved. One of them's a very close friend of mine, and I can't tell you how hard it was to come away from that and say, what's next? But you do, because, you know, that's what we do. So when we're a paramedic and people say, how can you look at all those injured people? And it doesn't even faze you. We usually gently smile to them and say, well, that's what we do. Well, we need to do that as a leader, too. We need to be the positive mentor, the positive person that's out there. And there'll be some naysayers will go, oh, he's crazy. You know, the whole place is falling apart. But it is contagious. Patrick's right. Your attitude exudes, and it picks up enough of that motivation. Now, a lot of the motivation, and I'm going to explain what I said a minute ago, a lot of motivation is internal. And I have employees that come and say, you know, what can you do about motivation? Well, I can do my small little part, but if you're not willing to take that train ride with me, it's kind of a waste. We have people who motivate themselves on things. I mean, great, great things. Over Thanksgiving, they decided they wanted to do a dress down, and at in-service, how do we do it? Before I even said, they said, hey, how about 5 cans of food? And we'll donate 5 cans of food, and we get to dress down. We gave a local food bank over 400 pounds of food before Thanksgiving. They did that. I didn't. It was their idea. So I think before you step out, you need to get your head in the game and straight. And if it's music that you like, if it's art that you like and you want to look at some of the art you have in your house, if it's reading you like to do and you like to read positive books, you got to find what that is that motivates you and carries you on. So when you step out the door, it's action, and you are always, always the positive guy.
Yeah, I kind of like that, and I have to agree, and I'll give you my thought about keeping yourself motivated. But as we get up there in time, we're probably going to need to start thinking about how we're going to close already, believe it or not, guys. But, you know, one of the things that I think about to keep myself motivated is, you know, the reason that we got into this job. And regardless of what happens at home, we all start off with those bad days. You know, we spilled coffee on our shirt. The dog just won't go out. Your wife, I mean, she just won't stop that breathing in and out all the time. And you just don't want to do. You're getting caught in traffic. You know, so, and I joke about that, honey, if you're listening, you know I love you. But you have to be able to take yourself out of that. And when you go to work, you know, those people need you. Your people need you just like your patients need your people. You know, this week I had a situation where one of my leadership team, I mean, she's just so motivated. She's just a little ball of energy. And she was just snappy. And I had to pull her aside and I say, you know, well, what's wrong with you? She goes, well, nothing's wrong. I said, well, how are your deadlines? How are things going? Come to find out, you know, she was having some challenges getting the kid ready in the morning and, you know, it messed up her whole day and it was coming out at work. And, you know, those things kind of show. So we have to remember that, you know, our people need us. And, you know, the smile that you give them is the smile that you get back. And we have to remember always be as motivating as we can with them. But let's go ahead and think about, as we get ready to close, we're coming up on almost 50 minutes of time that we've spent together. Patrick, maybe I can go to you first. And, you know, we talk about a lot of things, you know, and we do a lot of things on a show, and we laugh before and we laugh during. And, you know, as we edit, we take some of those things out, and we got a really good outtake reel that's going to come to you eventually. But if you think about as we get to the end of the year, what kind of closing thought as a leader do you give to the leaders that are out there?
You know, my first thought is, yeah, thank you for what you're doing. And I mean that with all the sincerity in my heart. It's not an easy job. It never has been. It never will be. And I've said it, I don't know how many times, I think EMS is the most noble profession in the world. And I truly have a longing for it. What Don was saying about, you know, if you don't get excited about what you do. I had lunch today at a restaurant and an EMS crew came in and I said, I didn't know them. They're not obviously people that have ever worked for me, et cetera. And I said, man, I miss it. And he looked at me and said, what do you mean? I said, well, I was a paramedic for 12 years. And I said, it's the best job in the world. I said, I hope you enjoy it. And the guy just had this big old smile on his face and said, you know, it's pretty great. And I said, because when life gets down, you could turn the lights and sirens on and, you know, blow through a red light. Nobody else gets to do that outside of cops and firemen and us. So, you know, final thoughts for leadership. I mean, geez, it's an open-ended topic. But for those of you that are listening, I mean, first and foremost, thank you for what you do. I know you never hear it enough. And I know the job's not easy. And I know that there are times where every patient you get is, you know, is not the one that you'd like to take home to your family. Staying motivated, staying on task, and being that person that you need, that your staff needs you to be, is really one of the most important things out there. And find yourself a good mentor. Find somebody that you can buddy up to that will help guide you through all of your, not all of your decisions, but your major ones. Because remember, you're never doing this on your own. And look for partners outside of EMS if you have to. There's obviously hospital people, you know, your director of your emergency room. Try to make contacts with your executive team at your hospital that you serve with, your med control. Remember, you're not the first guy to invent the wheel here. There's other people that have done what you've done. Or, you know, there's great people out there like, you know, like I'll plug our own team. Rob, Chris, and Don are, you know, fantastic people. Chris was even saying before the show, we chuckle a lot. And, you know, we've talked about questions dealing with our own individual careers and issues that we're having and with what we're doing. And having that network is really incredible. If you don't have that, you know what? That is going to be my final thought. Build a network of people that you could trust and can talk to. And that's my final thought, long-winded as it is.
Well, we're used to it, so don't worry about it. Just really quick again, Patrick, folks that want to get in touch with you to maybe hire you as a consultant, how they get in touch with you?
Oh, yeah. My email address is ppianezza, common spelling, ppianezza @gmail.com. That's the fastest way to get in touch with me. Or my phone number is area code 803-622-7392. And more than happy to talk to you. And we can go from there if anyone's interested.
Awesome. Thank you very much. And go out to Virginia, bring in Rob Lawrence. What do you share with the listeners out there, Rob?
Well, this is the almost end of the year show, Chris. So let me talk to the new leaders. Back in the day, great American phrase, in fact, 3 decades ago, I had the privilege of being a cadet at the Royal Military Academy Sandhurst, and a great leadership school it was too. We had 6 principles by which we were instructed to live our lives by and to develop our own leadership skills by. And those were pride in yourself, integrity, which is absolute. Learning, there is never a day when you don't learn anything. Humor, and we've already talked about this, and Patrick just hit the nail on the head, you know, the ability to laugh, you know, at yourself and with others. Service, and everybody in EMS has cracked the service bit because we do this. It's a way of life and not a job. And courage, both physical and moral. Those 6 points have certainly guided me. But I think in summary, you know, to the new leader, leadership is an art and not a science. But to master that art, of course, you have to start with a blank canvas. But the support, mentorship, guidance you get from your leaders, your managers, and in fact, you know, great sages like listening to Don Lundy here tonight will help you create and paint a great picture. Now, once in a while, you may have to brush over the canvas and redraw a little bit, but it's an opportunity to develop and flourish, and don't be afraid to have a go.
Awesome. You know, Don was talking about earlier that, you know, him shutting off his iPhone and not getting his email. When we were in Fort Worth, he actually got a message via carrier pigeon. So it was very interesting. But Don, go ahead.
Yeah, what do you get? But that was the digital pigeon. So that was a little
up. Darn them internet.
That's right. Well, first of all, and I'd echo Patrick, thanks to everybody for what you do. This is not an easy job, and it's certainly not easier with the various things that are going on. All you need to do is get on the net and kind of read what's going on around the country, and it's either very exciting or very scary, depending upon what road you happen to be on. I've had the opportunity in the last 2 weeks to, number one, be disconnected, and for that, I thank my cardiologist and my bride of 39 years, both who said, turn it off. And I would say towards the end of the year, if you are listening to this program tonight and you shake your head and you say, I just couldn't do that, I would ask you to, at some point, maybe not tonight, but in the next little while, sit with your loved ones and ask what that would mean to them. Because you are truly missing an opportunity to be your own. You are not the paramedic leader. You're a father, you're a husband, you're a brother. And it is, and I'm not going to say this is easy, it's very hard in our internet-connected digital world to do that. But it will mean the world to your family, and it'll mean to the world to you health-wise. But the other thing I want to tell you is something that happened shortly after this heart attack. The next day, right after the cath, I spent in ICU, and the paramedic, and I'll mention his name, Alex Beach, and Mallory. Mallory, I think she was working an extra shift. She wasn't there, but Alex came up to see me. And anybody that's had this kind of thing where they give you some drugs to take you down, and while you're back up, your clock really gets clean. You don't know when things happen. You kind of remember some of it, but you're... The idea that they came at 4 o'clock or 2 o'clock or before the heart attack or after, you really don't know. But I remember Alex coming in and smiling and shaking my hand and said, I just want to come up and see how you were. And I meant it sincerely when I said, Alex, you saved my life. And I can't ever pay that back. Even right now, as I tell you this, it's a very emotional thing for me. And they give you the little booklet that said this will be emotional, but you really don't know. And he kind of smirked like all of us would and say, oh, no, you know, the doctors did that. And I looked him in the eye and said, they can't work on something that's nothing. And you got me here as something. And without your work, I would be dead. And I believe that just as I am right there. Now, did I mean to motivate him or to? Well, no, that's not what I meant. But little moments like that you have with people in this career to simply put their head on straight, to give them something to look forward to. Because the leaders listening tonight, you know, we've talked about motivation and great things, but there's going to be days that it's just in the toilet. There are going to be days that decisions are made that you just can't believe that's the decision they made. Well, fall back to your paramedic training for a minute. You have arrests that don't make it, and it's real bad. And then you say, what's next? And you realize that that's one cog that you worked on and the next cog is going to do well. Well, as a leader, when you can't seem to get motivated, take those little gems that are out there and use them and bring them up. If you're a leader and you want to motivate, take those small little opportunities to tell them what a great job they did. Because I'm telling you, and honestly, from the heart, Alex Beach and Mallory saved my life. You know, they didn't pull me out of a burning house, and they didn't, you know, extricate me from a burning car, but they might as well have. And I hope he can take that away and say, wow, gee, you know, I guess I did, because he did. Take those small moments with the people that you lead, and it doesn't need to be gushy, but tell them how important they are, because without them, all of us as leaders are just a bunch of people going harumph, or just a bunch of people around the water cooler. Without them, we have nothing, and they can make you look like the greatest leader in the world. It's not the other way around. What they do makes you look good.
You know, and I think that's awesome. And I think anything that's said after that really kind of takes away. So with that, everybody out there, for Patrick Pianeta, Don Lundy, and Rob Lawrence, I want to say thanks for joining us. And we'll talk to you guys again real soon. Have a great night.